brothers and sisters, committed Muslims. This is the 18th ayah in Surah Ibrahim, and roughly translated it goes as follows. The similarity of the actions of those who deny Allah's presence in the human affair is like ashes blowing in a violent wind on a stormy day. They will not be able to consolidate anything of what they think is achievable. And the fact that they think that they would be able to consolidate their gains is indeed the distant deviation. I quote this ayah because the word kufr is thrown around as if it doesn't mean anything. That label can be given to just and almost to everyone. And the reason that I quote this ayah today is so that we can look at the world that we live in and identify the behaviors that are really associated with kufr as opposed to the label that is given by some holier-than-thou Muslims to other Muslims. We happen to be witnessing right in our present day an empire crumbling before our very eyes. The monies which this empire is spending in overseas engagements and wars of occupation, that money could be better spent at home to solve pressing problems. The sins of soldiers abroad is mirrored by the sins of ex-soldiers who become police officers at home. No amount of money, no amount of power, and no amount of technological progress is going to delay America's reckoning with its sins. Growing up as a person of African origin in Europe or America is not much different than growing up as a Muslim in a world that is dominated by European philosophy and American hegemony. And nowhere is this more evident than what is going on right now in Syria. And what has been going on there, not only for the past 5 years, but for the past 7 decades. It is generally not our practice on this forum to go into current events in the first part of the khutbah. But this subject is so important, and it has been so misanalyzed if you look at the media, and even if you look at so-called Islamic analyses of the subject, that we feel it is important enough to be rendered in terms of Allah's ayat and the practice of His Messenger alayhi salatu wassalam. And so the bulk of this talk today is going to be more informative than ideological. We will go into the brief history of the past 7 decades of American and Western involvement in that country. And as we go through this history, please keep in mind this ayah from Surah Ibrahim. American involvement in Syria did not begin 5 years ago. In fact, it began much, much earlier, right after the end of World War II. During the Eisenhower administration during the 1950s, there were US-sponsored coups or coup attempts throughout the majority Muslim world, and in particular the Arab world and Islamic Iran. There were coup attempts in Egypt, in Jordan, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, and in Iran. And this, of course, is the heart of the Muslim world. Notably excluded from these coup attempts were the State of Israel and Saudi Arabia. And again, this is another fact to keep in mind. And so it is often asked in the media here, why is it that the Arab street hates the United States? Obviously, there's a love affair between Arab leaders and the United States. But as far as the people are concerned, which are not represented by their leaders, there is a hate affair between them and the United States. And it is not because of the freedoms and the liberty and everything else that material progress has brought here to the United States that causes those people across the ocean to hate the US. It is the fact that their representative governments or their potential representative governments have been deposed intentionally by successive governments here in the United States. And it doesn't matter whether those governments are Republican or Democratic. That policy has persisted across the board for the past 7 decades. Again, during the 1950s, in the Eisenhower administration, the US rebuffed Soviet proposals to keep the Middle East neutral in the Cold War. And so the United States, through its CIA, mounted clandestine wars to prevent the Arabs from self-rule. And in this regard, it supported tyrannies all the way from Morocco to Iraq and from Syria to Arabia. Again, notably excluded was the State of Israel. And again, this is something to keep in mind. Throughout this time, the 1950s, the US gave secret military aid to tyrannies and dictatorships, from Saudi Arabia to Jordan to Lebanon to Iran and to Iraq. And during this time, Eisenhower was heard to have said to the executives of the CIA, we should do everything possible to stress the holy war aspect. This is all the way, brothers and sisters, back in 1957. The seeds for ISIS were being sown right after the end of World War II. CIA meddling in Syria began in 1949, when the government of Shukri al-Quwatli was overthrown by the CIA. This was a democratic, secular government. You would think that this would be a natural fit for the United States. As much as they talk about democracy, and as much as they push the separation of church and state across the world. But don't let Arabs and Muslims have their own representative government. If you have to have a representative government, it has to take the model of a dictator ruling over you, who makes all of your resources, human and otherwise, available to the West for their use. And the reason that this government was taken down in 1949 was because the president, Shukri al-Quwatli, refused to sign on to an American pipeline that would go from the eastern part of Saudi Arabia to end in Lebanon. And he refused to sign on to it. He refused to make his country available as a transit route for this pipeline. And once again, keep this oil aspect in your mind, because it's going to come up again. In 1955, after several coups and counter-coups, Shukri al-Quwatli was once again re-elected to be the president of Syria. But this time, having been stung by the United States, he decided to move into the Soviet orbit. And once again, keep in mind that when he became the president in 1949, he was establishing a democracy on the model of the United States. And it was the United States that ended up overthrowing a democracy which was modeled on the United States itself. So in 1955, it would be only natural for him to move into the Soviet orbit. 2 years earlier, in 1953, the same Eisenhower administration had organized a coup in Iran. They overthrew Mohammad Mossadegh. And again, the reason that they overthrew him is because he nationalized the assets of the Anglo-Iranian Oil Corporation, and he discovered a coup which was being organized by the executives of this oil corporation and British intelligence. But the mistake that he made is that he thought that the Americans were different than the British. And he felt that there was no way on earth that the Americans would organize a coup in the same way that the British were doing. By the way, this Anglo-Iranian oil company went on to become British Petroleum. The same British Petroleum that was responsible for the oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. The two people who organized the coup in Iran, they happened to show up at the United States Embassy in Syria in 1957. These two, by the name of Kermit Roosevelt, U.S. Special Agents Kermit Roosevelt and Rocky Stone, they came to do inside of Syria in 1957 what they did in Iran in 1953. And so they immediately started paying and bribing Syrian military officers to conduct a coup against their own government. And they also began to launch provocations inside of Syria's neighbors, in Iraq, in Jordan, and in Lebanon, to be blamed on the Syrian Ba'athi government. And now we come to a footnote in this ugly chapter of American history. And most of the chapters in that history are ugly. This is not something that gives us any pleasure to talk about. In fact, it is very painful for this speaker and for other speakers who have tried their best to associate with the Islamic movement. But it was in 1957 that the Ikhwan, the Muslim Brotherhood, started working with the American CIA. They started working hand in hand to unseat the elected Syrian government. Now, it's one thing to take an Islamic position against a secular government. It's quite another thing to ally with the enemies of Allah and the enemies of Allah's Prophet to try to achieve an end which may be a good end, but with means that are defective. When we follow Allah's Prophet, alayhi wa alihi salatu wa salam, we don't only appreciate the outcomes, but we must also utilize the means that he used. His method and his methodologies are as important as the outcomes. The ends do not justify the means. The means have to be subsumed to the Quran and the Sunnah, as must be the objectives. And as painful as it is to talk about this chapter of recent Islamic history, we still have to say at the same time that even though this relationship started in 1957, it has endured until 2016. And because this relationship has endured over all these decades, this is what was responsible for the Muslim Brotherhood's appraisal of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, and for its working behind the scenes to undermine a bona fide Islamic revolution in Islamic Iran. This is what is responsible for when an elected Ikhwani government took control in Egypt a few years ago, that it came first to Washington as opposed to going to the Islamic capital in Tehran. And again, it is because of this enduring relationship that began in Syria in 1957. Nonetheless, this coup attempt in 1957 in Syria was foiled. The Syrian military officers didn't take the bait. In fact, what ended up happening is that the coup plotters were arrested, they were imprisoned, and they were interrogated. The American embassy was occupied, and it was shut down. And one of these coup plotters, by the name of Rocky Stone, he confessed to all of America's dissembling activities in the Middle East. And in retaliation for this confession, the United States ordered its 6th Fleet into the Mediterranean, and it tried to goad Turkey into attacking Syria. And to this end, Turkey amassed 50,000 troops on the Syrian border. And this once again has poisoned the relationship between Turkey and Syria. This was the genesis of that enduring conflict between Syria and Turkey. Not a conflict that emerged because Muslims were at odds with each other. It's a conflict that emerged because of the divide and conquer policy of Muslim enemies. And again, it's a conflict that persists to this day. The attempted coup in Syria in 1957 unleashed a slew of protests across the Arab world, from Morocco to Iraq, And ultimately it led to the overthrow of the US-backed dictator in Iraq in 1958, a person by the name of Nuri al-Sa'id. And then years later, to be precise, about 15 to 16 years later, the US created a Saddam Hussein. The US created a Saddam Hussein to purge all of the communists out of Iraq. And this Saddam, he dutifully followed orders. He killed off all of the communists to satisfy US geostrategic objectives. And in return, the United States handsomely awarded him with banned chemical and biological weapons, with anti-tank missiles and anti-aircraft missiles, all of which he liberally used in the 1980s war against Islamic Iran. Again, his ultimate reward was that he was hanged by the United States, just as all of those other dictators who were proxies of the United States and Israel and Saudi Arabia and the rest of the European Union. All of them suffered this same fate. How when their usefulness came to an end, their lives came to an end. And so this leads us to the current situation in Syria. With this backdrop and with this Quranic ayah in mind, once again the ayah is the 18th ayah in Surah Ibrahim. مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا بِرَبِّهِمْ أَعْمَالُهُمْ كَرَمَادٍ اشْتَدَّتْ بِهِ الرِّيحُ فِي يَوْمٍ عَاصِفٍ لَا يَقْدِرُونَ مِمَّا كَسَبُوا عَلَى شَيْءٍ ذَلِكَ هُوَ الضَّلَالُ الْبَعِيدُ. Notice how Allah Jalla wa Ala associates the actions of those who reject his authority with ashes blowing in a violent wind. To begin with, ashes have no weight, and thus the actions of kafirs in the world have no weight. Ashes blowing in the wind are not organized, and thus the actions of the real kafirs in the world are not organized, they're not structured. They lead to consequences that are very hard to deal with. They lead to wars. They lead to revolutions. They lead to displacements. They lead to dislocations. They lead to refugees. They lead to economic decline. This is what is meant by ashes blowing in a violent wind on a stormy day. What is going on in Syria today didn't start in 2011. They tell us in the media, in the news, that the Arab Spring came to Syria in 2011. The Arab Spring that started in Tunisia and then went to Egypt and then to Libya, it came to Syria in 2011. This is what they're saying. We know that the Western involvement in that part of the world predates even American involvement there. It goes back to the British and the French, and before that, it goes back to the Crusades. This is a vital part of the world. This is a vital part of the world's geography. And this is a vital part of a divine program that provides solace and refuge for the world's refugees. be said that the current conflict in Syria started in the year 2000. And once again, we're going to return to the oil equation that we talked about before. Because the previous Syrian government refused an American-built pipeline that would go through Syrian territory. And the current conflict has occurred because the current president of Syria, taking a page out of that old book, refused a Qatari pipeline that was to transit through Syria. In the year 2000, the Qatari government proposed a $10 billion natural gas pipeline that would start in the oil field in the natural gas basin of the Persian Gulf, on the Qatari side of the Persian Gulf, and go through Jordan into Syria and then into Turkey. And from Turkey, it would be distributed to the European market. Now, as far as this natural gas repository in the Persian Gulf is concerned, half of it is on the Arabian side of the Persian Gulf, and the other half is on the Iranian side of the Persian Gulf. Now, during these years, you know, all the way up until the present, the Islamic government in Iran has been under sanctions. And thus, it can't sell its natural gas. But as far as Qatar is concerned, it's not under any sanctions. And so it felt that by building this pipeline to Europe, that it could monopolize the distribution of natural gas in that part of the world and perhaps the whole world. Because this natural gas basin in the Persian Gulf happens to be the largest repository of its kind in the entire world. Now, there were obvious advantages to have built this pipeline to Turkey. As far as Qatar is concerned, Qatar has two of the largest American military bases in the whole world. It is also the headquarters of the U.S. Central Command. As far as Turkey is concerned, it would be the distribution hub for natural gas into Europe. Many people don't know this, but Turkey has $132 billion external debt. Much of the economic progress that took place during the administration of the AKP government, meaning Erdogan's government, was done on borrowed funds. And that, by the end of 2009, reached $132 billion. And so for Turkey to get a transit and a distribution fee for the sale of natural gas to the European market, it had hoped that it would reduce its external debt through this agency. And so Turkey had a lot to lose if this pipeline didn't go through. And obviously, as far as the United States is concerned, its contractors would be employed to build this pipeline. And it would get a recurring fee from the profits of natural gas that would be sold to the European market. Instead of those profits going to Russia, those profits would then be coming to the United States. Again, to aid an ailing economy, which has been mismanaged for decades by either Republican or Democratic administrations. There are obvious disadvantages to this pipeline as well. The obvious disadvantage is to Russia. Russia supplies currently 70% of the natural gas that goes to Europe. And obviously Russia wouldn't want this pipeline to be in place, because then its sales of natural gas to the European market would be curtailed. And then in fact the European Union would have a bargaining chip. They would bargain the Qatari pipeline against the provision of natural gas from Russia, such that they could get the lowest price from either one. But given Syria's relationship with the West, in particular the United States and Israel, Bashar al-Assad in 2009 refused to have anything to do with this American pipeline from Qatar to Turkey. In fact, he endorsed a Russian proposal to build a pipeline from the Iranian portion of this natural gas repository through Syria and into Lebanon. And the second that he did this, that he endorsed this alternate pipeline proposal through Syria into Lebanon, that's when the American, the Saudi, and the Israeli intelligence agencies got together and started hatching a plan to get rid of Bashar al-Assad from office, to overthrow his government. In 2013, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Saudi Arabia offered to foot the bill for the United States to invade and occupy Syria. For a US ground invasion of Syria. They said that we'll pay the entire bill regardless of the cost. And we know today what the cost of the US involvement in Iraq and Syria has been. It is now going into $2 trillion. And these Gulf monarchies offered to pay the entire bill for a US occupation and invasion of Syria. But the US, still fresh out of its wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, could not take on another war front. And so it decided to unleash these jihadi fighters that it had been creating for 50 years plus. Remember, the Eisenhower administration started to create these jihadi fighters in 1957. The seeds of ISIS were sown over 60 years ago. It only took 30 years to get to a level of maturity where they could be unleashed against American enemies and against Muslims themselves. The first testing ground for this jihadi army were the Mujahideen in the 1980s fighting against the Afghan Mujahideen fighting against the Soviet Union. The next round was the Taliban fighting against other Afghan insurgents inside of Afghanistan. The third installment, of course, was Al-Qaeda. And the culmination of Al-Qaeda's insurgency was what happened in unseating Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. And now we are witnessing the final incarnation of the seeds that were laid in 1957 in the form of ISIS. The US couldn't engage in another ground invasion of another Muslim country, and so it decided to participate in creating a so-called Sunni insurgency to unseat the elected government in Syria. And this is how ISIS emerged. Don't let anyone tell you that ISIS is just a combination of disaffected Iraqi military officers and mercenaries from all over the world. That it is. But its roots date far back into American foreign policy. Something like ISIS doesn't emerge overnight. It needs to mature over time. It needs ideological indoctrination from Saudi Arabia. It needs military training from America. It needs medical help from Israel. And all of these institutions don't just crop up overnight. This was a plan in the works And many of you may have heard about the United States talking about a mobile expeditionary force that could be sent anywhere in the world. And I ask you, brothers and sisters, what is ISIS other than that mobile expeditionary force? Where U.S. soldiers don't have to be employed, but where U.S. strategic ends are achieved. And so one final note on this issue. It is no coincidence that the areas that the Islamic State has occupied in Syria and Iraq, that they mirror the exact route that the Qatari pipeline would have taken through those two countries. The areas occupied by ISIS are the areas that that pipeline would have gone through. And so what's going on in Syria, despite the way that it's presented, is not about humanitarian relief. It's not about democracy. It's not about representation. It's about a war for oil. It's about the security of Israel and Saudi Arabia. And most importantly, it's about keeping the majority Muslim world from committing to an Islamic leadership in Islamic Iran. أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه يغفر لكم فاسترشدوه يرشدكم. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله. Brothers and sisters, I know that there was a lot of information that was presented in the previous words, but in order for us to understand Allah's ayat, we have to put them into the context in which they were revealed. If we have to understand kufr, we have to understand how it functions in the real world that we live in today. These are the kinds of policies which produce not only tyranny and oppression, but the rivers of tears and blood that have been flowing in the poorer parts of the world. It is no secret anymore that the US, the Israeli, and the Saudi desire to overthrow the government, the elected government of Syria, has failed. But that doesn't mean that they've given up. Currently, they're pursuing a policy of stalemate in the region. What this means is that these three countries, the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia, are going to continue to arm the insurgency, and if the insurgency gains an upper hand on the Syrian government, then they're going to withdraw the flow of arms and finances. And if it's the Syrian government that gains the upper hand, then they're going to increase the flow of arms and finances to the insurgency, such that it's a long, drawn-out affair, perhaps over decades. And obviously the reason that they're doing this is to bleed economically and financially, Islamic Iran and Hezbollah. They're going to try to draw out this affair as long as they can in order to weaken Islamic Iran and to weaken Hezbollah so that Israel can occupy the territories that are now being managed by Hezbollah, and so that the government, the Islamic government in Iran, can be changed to a proxy government that is allied to the Western world, the European Union, the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. But know, brothers and sisters, that this stalemate policy is a blueprint. What works overseas can be employed equally well at home. Don't think that there is any initiative or any desire on the part of officials in Washington to solve the endemic race problems in the United States. If you truly intend to solve problems which are killing and destroying your own society, then you put finances behind them. But if we follow the money trail, the majority of this country's finances are being dedicated to prosecuting war, wars of occupation, and wars of aggression overseas. You can't be hated by your own people. And you can't be hated by the majority of the world's people and expect to survive as a country. There are fissures appearing in the edifice of the United States. And every subsequent crack is larger and wider than its predecessor. And to all of those policy makers in Washington and Tel Aviv and Al-Riyadh, not only do we say to them these ayat that they ought to be paying attention to, but we also say that respect, honor, and dignity are reciprocated in kind.